The Stranger in Your Gates, commentary for the October 30th, 2021 Sabbath School Lesson by Stephen Terry, Director, Stillwaters Ministry, www.visitstillwaters.com. Cursed is anyone who withholds justice from the foreigner, Deuteronomy 27:19. Our lesson this week comes at a time when hatred of foreigners seems to be at a fever pitch in the United States. Tragically, much of that heat comes from the right-wing evangelical community. Some might decry the political implications of my statement, but the Bible is clear about our treatment of foreigners, regardless of what is preached from evangelical pulpits. This is placed in stark relief by Season 1, Episode 6 of the television adaptation of Neil Gaiman's American Gods. A link to that episode is provided in the footnotes in the written copy of this commentary. In that episode, Hispanic refugees are crossing the Rio Grande into Texas. Jesus, who is also Hispanic, helps them, even walking on water, in confirmation of his identity. While the refugees are giving thanks for his help, several large trucks arrive with armed Americans who floodlight the area and open fire on the refugees with weapons engraved with scripture passages and biblical imagery, including the crown of thorns and a cross dangling from a trigger guard. Jesus tries to stop the violence and is shot to death, with the wounds and his posture in death resembling the stigmata and the cross. The entire scene is deeply disturbing, but ironic for the portrayal of Christians murdering foreigners for no other reason than their being foreigners. Inadvertently, it also highlights the idea of the supremacy of a white Jesus over a Hispanic one, a sentiment not too far removed from the ideals of the Inquisition and its persecutions of minority religions, even minority Christian confessions. The idea is not new to America. Even before we were a country, Puritans happily tortured and executed Quakers when they could get away with it. Some of that streak persists to the present in the rudeness of some, even preachers and other religious leaders, toward those who dissent from a denomination's dogma, sometimes even over trivial matters. This is not limited to evangelicals. It is a national embarrassment to see some of the same sentiments we decry in non-Christian extremists echoed by conservative elements in many denominations. Every feeling of hatred in our hearts toward anyone, even foreigners, is a hollow-point bullet fired straight into the body of Jesus. He died for each one, and our hatred put him on that cross as surely as any sin. Every hateful thought is a powerful blow from the hammer that nailed his innocent flesh to the rude cross of Golgotha. Our hatred would nail him to that cross for all eternity, never allowing him to be set free and rise to glory. When we hate, we want none of grace. We only endorse the inescapable condemnation of the law. Unlike the Israelites, who only wandered Sinai for 40 years, we continue to circle the mount where Moses received the Decalogue, choosing never to enter the Promised Land. Grace could set us free, but we do not want freedom. We want to cherish our prejudices, and so we continue to wander. Why do we harbor such hostility to foreigners? It is because of things. We have more things than they have. And like a petulant child, we do not want to share. We choose to forget that keeping them in poverty under authoritarian governments is what makes it possible for us to have so many of those things. Working away in sweatshops and even prisons, millions toil away to enable us to have cheap holiday decorations, fashionable clothing, and affordable electronics, things that those workers could never afford for themselves. We also forget that conditions were once similar in the United States until the union movement fought for safer, sanitary work conditions, and the outlawing of child labor that amounted to little more than cradle-to-grave slavery. Dying in mines, or from exposure to toxic chemicals in factories, or from unsafe working conditions, as in the Triangle Shirtwaist Factory fire of 1911, where 146 workers perished in the flames, became things of the past. But American manufacturers often simply exported those working conditions overseas, beyond the reach of American laws. Even so, always with the idea of returning those good old days of exploitation to the United States, wealthy corporate leaders and their bought politicians have looked to overturn the progress made by workers through right-to-work laws that are simply attempts to enlist the workers in a campaign to demolish the unions, and outright government union busting, like government intervention in the air traffic controllers strike. Most workers have nowhere to turn when wages remain almost stagnant and corporate profits and officers' salaries soar into the stratosphere. Nonetheless, as working conditions degrade in the United States, they are still much better than in several third world countries. Life is cheap there, as it once was here. If someone is injured or dies on the job, they are quickly replaced with few questions asked. Sustentation wages are considered a good income in those places where starvation and homelessness are the only other options. So there are always others willing to step into the vacancy in the assembly line. Even at those low wages, there are not enough jobs to keep all the people housed, fed, and clothed, so they look to the country where everyone appears to have at least these minimum needs met. They do not see the homeless thronging our streets or the long lines at the food banks, but they do see the American tourists visiting their country with things they could never hope to own. Even Christian missionaries come to build churches with their smartphones, designer label clothing, and the funding to build churches the locals will not be able to afford to support. So they come to the country that has all these things, drawn by a dream that they too will one day have everything the tourists and missionaries have, only to be met at the border and told they cannot have the things Americans have. And instead of the rich young man going away sorrowful, it is the impoverished foreigner who sacrificed all to appeal to the compassion of America, the wealthy Christian country, who turns sadly away. One might be tempted to think that if America secures its borders against the rest of the world, there will be no problems. But a country that hoards the wealth of the world becomes a tempting target, much like a man who wears a Rolex watch in a high-crime neighborhood. That man, obsessed with his rights, may feel he has the right to walk anywhere he chooses without incident, but the thief, driven by the despair of poverty or lust for the watch, is not concerned with his victim's rights. To him, the man seems a fool that would take such chances and deserves to be parted with his watch, and the crime is soon committed. However, if the man had a bodyguard or a police escort, he might go where he wished without trouble. This is a microcosm of what we have on a global scale and explains why such a huge portion of America's GNP goes into military expenditures. It is the same pattern followed by the Roman Empire. Republican Empire together lasted 1,000 years, but others outside the empire continually threatened the gates of Rome and Constantinople. In the end, the empire collapsed under those pressures when it became so weak from internal corruption they could no longer stand. Evangelical Christians and their ilk are often not concerned about that. Instead, they think we are entering the apocalypse that heralds the parousia. Rather than showing compassion and empathy for those in need, both foreign and domestic, they are hunkering down with their things to ride out the storm, to hell with everyone else. They're stockpiling guns and ammo to kill anyone who threatens their stash, preferring to kill others than feed and shelter them. We should have seen this coming in a country where churches are often temples to excess as opposed to humble shelters for common worship. We delude ourselves into thinking they are monuments to God but instead they are monuments to our own prosperity, often extorted from those who have few options. Beautiful as they may be, the words of Jesus echo from the past. "Do you see all these things?" he asked. "Truly I tell you, not one stone here will be left on another. Every one will be thrown down." Matthew 24, verse 2. Jesus was not speaking of the apocalypse or of his coming. He was referring to only a few decades hence when Rome would destroy Jerusalem and the temple, plundering the city for its wealth. As our opening verse says, how we treat others can be a blessing or a curse to us. The wealthy rulers of Christ's day looked down upon the common people as lazy and unworthy of better things. They pointed to their immoral lifestyles as proof that God will not bless them, and they pointed to their own wealth and power, like pseudo-ancient Joel Osteens, as proof that God is blessing them and thereby endorsing what they were doing. Little did they know that they were bringing on themselves a curse that would last for 2 millennia before they could claim Jerusalem for the Jews once again. In view of such lessons, we cannot allow ourselves to value things more than people and abuse those in need, whether living next door to us or foreigners seeking refuge among us. If we cannot have empathy for others trespassing on our soil, we may find our failure following us into judgment before God. Thank you for listening to this commentary. You can find the written version of this commentary, as well as the footnotes linking to the video that I previously mentioned and to other resources, at our website at www.visitstillwaters.com. There are also hundreds of other commentaries there that may be interesting. May God bless you richly along with your family.